From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by Thoroughgraph, everything you need to win. Visit Thoroughgraph.com. The new Colonial Downs and the Virginia Equine Alliance. Hill and Dale, home of perennial standouts. Curlin, Kitten's Joy, Midnight Luke, and emerging stallions, Violence, Byron, and Army Mule. Visit hillanddalefarms.com for consignments at the 2019 yearling sales. Case Supply, the kitchen and bath professionals across upstate New York. Showrooms in Syracuse, Auburn, and Amsterdam. Make your dream kitchen and bath a reality. Visit casesupplyinc.com. And McMahon of Saratoga, standing breakout stallion central banker. Number one in New York and among the nation's leading young sires. Visit McMahonThoroughbred.com.
Good morning and welcome to Loose on the Lead on a beautiful Sunday morning live from Saratoga. Seth Merrill here on the set in front of Clare Court. We were expecting a phone visit from Steve Bick. Unfortunately, something came up for Steve, can't make it. But the game plan is he will be sitting live here next Sunday. So we're looking forward to that. I think also radio show will kick back into action sometime this week. We'll see. But again, we'll have Steve live with us hopefully next week and catch up. I know a lot of people have been asking as I've been walking around the track. So, Steve, if you're watching, folks are asking about you, get back. Heal up first, but then get back to action because everybody's thinking about you. And as I say, as I walk around the track during the day, a lot of questions as to how Steve is doing. So hopefully things are healing up well. And as I say, a week away from the return of Mr. Bick here on the set. Coming up, though, on today's show, Paul and Duke Matisse will join us. The brother team that three years ago, first and fourth in the National Handicapping Championship out in Las Vegas. Contest players, handicappers, a couple of interesting guys. We look forward to having him here on the set with us every year for some good conversation about handicapping and the racing game in general. A little bit after that, Nicole Russo from the Daily Racing Forum. She covers the breeding side of the game. We'll talk a little bit about the sales results from past Monday and Tuesday, and also tonight and tomorrow, the New York bred sale just up the street at the Facic Tipton Pavilion. We'll get a little preview of that action with Nicole as well. I wanted to start things out with some recaps of the stakes action yesterday. First, let me remind you of promos and events worth noting today here at the racetrack. Low Rollers Contest. Jump in the four-star day bar area down in that carousel restaurant area in the back of the grandstand. That's where the sign-up is. Always a lot of fun. I always say you have to think a little bit differently with these handicapping contests. Look for some value. Should be a lot of fun if you haven't tried it. If you have tried it, you know how much fun it is. Take your shot. Low Rollers this year, Sundays and Thursdays. So jump in today. As far as OTB, it's a double promotion at the Clubhouse Racebook. So stop by 711 Central Avenue in Albany if you can't make it up to the track today and enjoy the double promotion down at the Racebook on Central Avenue in Albany. All right, let's take a look. There was some very nice stakes action yesterday, both here and out at Arlington. We'll take a look at a little bit of that. First up, we're going to take a look at the two-year-old stakes race here at Saratoga. Saratoga Special, Grade 2 event, $200,000 up for grabs, 6.5 furlongs. The favorite was Green Lake Go. As I say, early on, the Keneally horse, the number one noose, was taking some action. That horse did wind up to be the 2-1 second choice. 3-2 was Green Lake Go. Green Lake Go is going to be the number three horse. Noose, number one. Tuggle, the Bill Parcells, Jeremiah Englehart horse, runs third, the number four horse. Green Lake Go, though, number three in here. Boy, what a good-looking two-year-old for Jimmy Jerkins. Two starts, two wins, a nice buyer. I haven't seen the buyer yet for this race yesterday, but the career debut buyer was an 84. You know, you're talking July for a two-year-old, and 84 is a pretty good number. Validated it with this performance yesterday. So 3-1-4, as you see under the wire, with Green Light Go, getting it done. Stronic Stables, Jimmy Jerkins, nice-looking two-year-old. We'll see what's up next for that one. But obviously, the potential is there for a solid two-year-old season ahead, and we'll see what happens as we progress into next year. But so far, 2-for-2 with a pretty nice-looking Saratoga Stakes win on the resume now at this point. Talk about good-looking Saratoga Stakes wins. Had Mark Cassie on with me on Thursday morning, and we talked a little bit about Got Stormy and plenty of other topics as well. But Got Stormy, interesting on the quick comeback in the grade one event in the four-star day. And Mark said he was kind of leaving it up to owner Gary Barber. He was going to tell Gary how the horse was progressing during the week and then let Gary make the decision, and it was full steam ahead. When Mark sat in here on Thursday morning, he said Got Stormy had been out on the track, looked great on Thursday morning, so they went, and I'm sure they're very happy they did now. A week after winning the Della Rose, in near track record time, and it would have been a record, but it had been broken either earlier that day or the day before, but she got that right yesterday, breaking the track record in the four-star day grade one event, as she is a filly facing the boys. Boy, she's the number six horse. You can see getting out to a long lead was Gidu, but that one gets swallowed up in the stretch. For a while, it looks like Made You Look, the number nine horse, may be tough to get. But, boy, look at number six, Got Stormy, just run by and put in a great performance here. Again, two stakes at Saratoga in a week's time, and gets it done over number four, Raging Bull. That was the horse I liked. I was taking a little shot of the other Chad Brown runner. Uni was the one that took the action. Uni was the 9-5 favorite. That one ran third. I liked Raging Bull a little bit better. Ran a good second to just edge the stablemate, but they were a chart margin of 2.5 lengths behind a very impressive Got Stormy. I was in the winner's circle after the race and was kind of listening in as Mark Cassie talked to some of the press people, and it was interesting. He said, always paid attention to Alan Jerkins when he said, when they're right, run them. When they're going good, you run them. And certainly that was the case with Got Stormy. The nice win last week. She's in good form, trained well into the race, and ran well, obviously, yesterday. She's just in raging good form. The question was, what's up next for Got Stormy? Mark Cassie said they're going to take a serious look at the Woodbine Mile. That's great for us because we will be headed up again to the Woodbine Mile shortly after this meet ends. So we'll look forward to potentially seeing Got Stormy up there giving that Woodbine Mile a shot again, as the filly likely to face some very good boys in competition up there. But she did it yesterday. Mark said on the show on Thursday he thought she was as good as any turf miler in the country right now, and seemed to validate that yesterday. And yesterday in the winner's circle, also took a moment to give a little comparison between this one and Teppan. So that tells you how much he thinks it Got Stormy. And it was a very, very nice performance yesterday by that one. All right, let's take a look at some of the action out in Chicago yesterday. Arlington Million Day. That means three grade ones, the Arlington Million, the Beverly D, and the Secretariat. And who won them all? Chad Brown won them all. No surprise with Bricks and Mortar. We'll watch the stretch run of the Arlington Million. Bricks and Mortar will be the number three horse, the 1-2 favorite. Gets it done over Magic Wand and Bandua. Magic Wand, a filly facing the boys from Aiden O'Brien. So that was a pretty nice performance from the Euro shipper. Magic Wand will be the number two horse. Bricks and Mortar, the number three horse. And you can see once he gets in gear, he's going to go right by these and get it done. Chart margin of 3/4 of a length over the filly from Europe, but never in doubt here. As I say, once he got in gear and got it done. You heard Brian Netto on the Handicapper Support kind of talk about this season. Just phenomenal. And again, I'm kind of putting that comeback effort at the end of December in this season. That was a comeback or an optional claimer. Got that done. Then won the Pegasus World Cup Turf Invitational. The Munoz down at Fairgrounds, the Turf Classic at Churchill, the Manhattan last time. Put the Arlington Million on the resume as well. So far this season, 4 grade one wins, 5-for-5 in 2019. And as I say, I'm almost pulling that race at the end of last year in, because that clearly is part of this season as well. But just his comeback of a long, long layoff of October 2017 to late December of last year. Came back from that layoff and has just looked phenomenal so far on the comeback. So Bricks and Mortar gets it done for Chad in the Arlington Million. But he also got it done in the Secretariat. Secretariat is going to be the number seven Valid Point lightly raced three-year-old on the turf for Chad Brown, but 2 for 2 so far in the career. Maiden breaker down at Gulfstream in February, then an optional claimer at Belmont in June, and now steps up to the Grade 1 Secretariat. Valid Point, the number 7. Van Beethoven, the number 2. Again, an Aidan O'Brien European Invader runs second, and the last Zip runs third. But it is Valid Point looking pretty good. And again, I said it earlier, I love this subdivision of three-year-olds on the turf, and I don't think this year anybody has really stepped up and kind of taken hold of it. Win-win-win might be a little bit interesting. We'll see what that one does going forward. Seem to appreciate the turf when they took the pop there. But Valid Point with the 3-for-3 record now and the win in the Secretariat, certainly makes claim to. And there isn't an Eclipse division for this, but it's just a fun kind of subdivision to keep your eyes on, and certainly makes a claim to being, well, at or very near the top at the very least. Let's also take a look at the Beverly D yesterday at Arlington. Why? Because it continues the dominance of Chad Brown. 3-for-3 in the three grade ones yesterday. Just incredible. No shock, really. Valid Point was, I suppose, a little bit surprising, was actually the second choice behind Fog of War, the other Chad turfer. But Sister Charlie and Bricks and Mortar were not surprising at all. Sister Charlie gets it done here, the number 7 horse. She will come up late, as you see, but draws off by 3 lengths as the 2-to-5 favorite. Running second was Awesome Tank, and running third, Competition of Ideas. So Chad runs first and third in here. Awesome Tank, another one of those Euro Invaders that tend to do pretty well on this Arlington Million card year in and year out, but not as well as the American runners coming out of the Chad Brown barn. Big day for local product Chad Brown. Congratulations to him and all the connections who got it done yesterday at Arlington in those three grade ones. So just wanted to take a couple of minutes to show some of that stakes action, not just from here where we had a couple of very, very nice races, but also out at Arlington where, again, that Arlington Million card annually, very, very intriguing, very classy, and it proved to be so yesterday as well with Chad Brown sweeping the grade ones out in Chicago. All right. We'll take a break. When we come back, Paul and Duke Matisse will talk a little handicapping, much, much more right after this. As the Loose on the Lead continues, stay tuned.
Recent study of some of the top online wagering sites, Capital OTB won big in total player rewards, far surpassing some of the best-known wagering sites in America. While other rewards programs simply offer you points redeemable for gift cards, Capital OTB's rebates are paid to you in actual cash. Plus, Capital OTB gives you full and immediate access to your money. So if all you're getting now are points and gift cards, join Capital OTB Player Rewards today and get cash back. Visit CapitalOTBBet.com and sign up today.
Welcome back to Loose on the Lead. As promised before the break, the Matisse brothers to my immediate right, Paul, on the far side, Duke. Good morning.
Good morning, Steph.
How are you doing?
Happy to have you in. And mentioned earlier, you guys, contest players, handicappers, and whatnot. Did you participate the last couple of days in the big contests?
I played on Friday, and I didn't do so well. Though I had a chance going to the last race. You know, these money contests are all, the last race is everything, and I was wrong in the last race, so... Saturday I didn't play because I had some stuff going, and I wanted to sit out in the back, and it's tough with those machines on Saturdays. Fridays I could handle it, but so I passed on Saturday. And I don't think I would have made it, but I don't think I would have done bad because the Arlington races were in it, right?
I'm not sure, but that makes sense.
Yeah. I think the Arlington races were in it, and we liked the Chad that won the Secretariat there.
So. Oh, valid point. Yeah. Duke, you play?
I did not.
You didn't play either?
I kind of was helping somebody play. Okay.
He's double qualified already.
I'm already double qualified.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask that, yeah.
I'm not. I got to work on it here for the second half.
I was thinking of taking a shot on Friday, and then I just have not been handicapping well enough to, I've been hitting in nice spots, but it's just, it's got to be your day. And I haven't had a feeling any day so far that it's been close enough my day that I wanted. And as it turned out on Friday, I wouldn't have done anything anyway, so yeah. I was happy. I had the winner in the last race. And as you mentioned, you and I were talking, it does come down, these live monies come down to the last race, and it's just, a few years ago I played, and I told you I was sitting top 10 the whole time. In the last race, I got knocked down to 14 because people swing for the fences the last race.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. But the leader had 3,900 on Friday going in the last race. He ended up with 14,000. Oh. And 3,900 didn't hit the top 10.
No.
I mean, so that's how.
Yeah.
That's a tough go, especially if you like your money.
Yeah. and that's the thing for me. I mean, it's tough for me. That day, I had, I think, $1,800 in, and $1,800 is a pretty good day for me, so I'm not gonna take the swing with the hole. But some guys, I think $1,800 is, they're loaded, and they can take the swing. So just that's kind of funny. But speaking of formats, what formats do you really like as far as contests?
Go ahead.
not just because I want it, but I like the NHC format because it's multiple days, and they have cuts. I think the cuts kind of take away that last race stuff, that the problems that you have either in bankroll or live money, it kind of eliminates that a little bit. So that's kind of I think is the best form. And there's more time, 3 days,
it
gives you more time where you're not have to, just pick, into one or two races. It's a full card. So,
To really define a good handicapper, it should be over a period of time because I think that's when the cream rises to the top.
Yeah,
to some extent.
It has to be a lot of races.
Yeah.
A format has to have a lot of races where people have to actually bet a lot of races.
Yeah. Which format do you prefer?
I probably like what Fairplex used to do. They used to do the full card, and everybody had to bet the same amounts of money. You couldn't bet more on something. So I think that'll determine who is the best guy that day.
Yeah,
you can't bet more on it.
I also like the pick and praise, and I know a lot of people, but that to me, that's pure handicap.
Yeah,
you don't get that shot at the end of the day where I'm.
But like Pete Fornatel, he's a game concept guy. So there is none of that in the pick and pray. So I understand why, it's not like there's nothing to it. It's just picking horses and playing. But by pure handicapping, it's way better.
It's way better than the live. But the live ones are just math.
Yeah. Because, again, you get to that last race, you're looking, I got so much money, what do I need to jump over the leader? And so you're not necessarily handicapping so much as looking at the odds. Yeah. Talk a little bit again, you guys, prominent handicappers, prominent contest players, but talk a little bit about how you became fans of the game and got into the handicapping side of the game.
Well, we used to, I've been, my whole family, my grandparents, both of them were racing fans, so we really weren't into the industry, per se, but we're just on the other side, and when I was in college, I kind of gave up all my other dreams and wanted to become a professional handicapper, and I got real lucky, got a job with Byer Speed Figures. With Andy Byer and Mark Hopkins, and I got that while I was in college. as they were coming about. We were back in those days. They were in the Briss, which is what is now Briss. It was like a TimeNet connection, and you know, before the internet.
Yeah.
if you can picture that. And then the Racing Times was started. So they needed somebody that would do all the tracks, and I was young and I wanted to do it. So, and that's kind of where we started, you know, from there.
And did you play off of Paul?
Kind of, because I was into bowling a lot when I was, you know, in my teenage years, and I was going to do that for a living. And when I got recruited to go bowl in Buffalo, Paul was there, and he had already started working for Beyer, and he showed me some things about couple racetracks that were nearby, Ford Erie and Greenwood, and we started making more money doing that than beating up on everybody bowling, so it kind of just went that way.
Was it your Finger Lakes days too? Because I was telling you, we did a Finger Lakes road trip, and one of the old timers there said, oh, the Batiste brothers, yeah, say hello, and you get to, yeah.
Finger Lakes really put us on the map, because that track we did really, really well at betting, and that was a couple years after that, so what was that, like 1992?
Yeah, early 90s.
Early 90s. We did really well at Finger Lakes.
And I probably told you at the beginning of the meet, but, you know, we do the handicapping show down in the studio the rest of the year, and a lot of times we're watching the pre-games from various racetracks and whatnot in between races. And the Santa Anita, you did the pre-game, I don't know, what, 2 months ago? And yeah, it was great. It was the pregame, so there was a lot of conversation that was great. And then you tossed out a couple of nice winners, so tip of the cap there. That was, as I say, very entertaining.
Yeah, Tom Quigley does a really good job out there. And I just had one of those days where I was in the zone and gave out six winners,
yeah,
and like four exactas. And somehow I didn't win a tournament. I ran third. but I made a few bucks.
That's always the way. Paul, you're still local, right? Balsan Spa.
Yep.
And Duke, are you out in Vegas?
Laguna Beach, California.
Oh, okay. Yep. It was Vegas, though, right?
Yes,
for
Vegas.
We were both in Vegas.
Early 2000s, yeah.
When you were in Vegas, did you play from home, or did you have a favorite race book?
Well, we started at the Boardwalk Holiday Inn, which was a real interesting place, but... Then moved on, and then I went to the Orleans and the Gold Coast, and then I went home pretty much. After that, I built a studio or whatever with races, you know, with screens in my an office at home. And
multiple.
The Orleans has a bunch of contests, and we go every year still, three, four times a year to the Orleans. They're horse racing friendly, so that's kind
of... Those are contests that are 3 days, so you have to really, you know, like, get a lot of winners, you know.
Yeah.
It's all... You pick all. It's not no mandatory. So you get to pick what you like for the whole. It's every track too, you know. So six to seven tracks.
Mandatory, I do like, because everybody's forced to focus on the thing. And again, to me, that's more of a handicapping face-off that really shows who's doing well. Speaking of contests, let's go back to 2016. You both made the final table. I think we have some pictures here. You're holding up the big check. Paul won that year. Duke ran fourth. We also have a shot in the ballroom. You and your dad, Chick, as well. Give us some memories of that. As I say, you both made the final table, ran first and fourth. That was a pretty good few days out in Vegas.
Yeah, you know, it... That worked out so good just because nothing bad happened. You know, it wasn't like a thing where I got, you know, real lucky or anything lucky happened the whole time. Just nothing bad happened the whole time. So, you know, just kind of everything where you needed to be, I was at. Duke was a little behind me, so he had to, you know, he had to come from behind every time. But for me, it just was one of those things where, you know, like I'm, like probably what a jockey thinks during the race, you know, just... Everything fell into the right spots the whole day, and nothing bad happened. You know, just clear sailing. Even there was a disqualification in the next to last race that I said, "Oh my God, I'm going to get DQ'd out of the NHC Championship," and because I would have
that would be brutal.
I would have had it sewed up in going with two races to go. My horse won and got disqualified, and the guy that was second, who's a very good handicapper, he got put up. So it became closer, and you know, then we were real close going into the last race. So, but even that didn't play into effect. You know, I had just, you know, good, as my friend Battler says, good vibes the whole day.
Yeah, it was fun. We were out there and it was my first time. We went out and covered it this year. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, you interviewed us out there.
Yeah. And, you guys were in the auxiliary ballroom. How was that?
No good.
No.
At first, I thought when we went down there, it was down in the next floor for people who didn't watch us when we covered it. And it was quieter, and it seemed like, yeah, maybe that'll work out. But as I got through the weekend, it's just more fun up in that other ballroom. There's more activity and a little more buzz. And
yeah, they're not going to do that this year because they're moving it over to Bally. So they got one room this year. So
yeah, it's going to be all in one room.
It'll all be in one room. It's not going to be, you know. We just really didn't have the right setup last year, and nothing went our way either. So
have you guys – so you're double qualified this year.
Double qualified,
Where did you qualify?
The very first tournament that I think – Paul won was at Santa Anita. It was in January. There was a
right before
they had a qualifier where you could take this last year's or this year's, and I already had one from last year, I already had two from last year, so I took one this year, and Paul took
his
second one for last year instead of taking this one,
and that was a big mistake. I'm not doing that again because you just think about it all year, you know. It's better to have the relief of knowing that you're in than
yet to qualify.
No, I've yet to qualify.
So there's plenty of opportunities left, right?
We'll get there.
Yeah.
But
and have you guys both been in every one so far, or
since we knew about it? You know, like the I missed I think 1 year, and I boycotted when there was real Polytrack stuff. But Duke's been in for
since I knew about it. I've been in every year that they've had it.
And talk about the experience. I mean, we're watching some of the shots here, and as I said, it was my first experience out there. Man, it's a lot of fun. It's a room full of like-minded people, and that's kind of the fun of it.
Yeah, it's really a lot of fun. I mean, just the atmosphere and the people you recognize, and there's, you know, you see Gallo. He just won the tournament up here.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of guys that love horse racing and are going toe-to-toe, you know, because the leaderboard's up there the whole entire time. Yeah. You see who's up there, and, you know, you see the guys you know,
It's a competition too. You know, every day is a competition when you're betting the races, but it's not the same as being in a, you know, like.
And it's a little tiring too. I mean.
Oh yeah, it's demanding.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah, yeah. I got that sense talking to people. It was. I'm eating dinner. I'm going upstairs, and I'm starting tomorrow's handicapping. Yeah. And the thing is, and I'll ask you guys because it's a number of tracks. So how do you narrow down in that situation what you're going to look at, or do you have to take a look at all of them first and then kind of start to parse out where you're going to make your plays?
I mean, I tend to look at them all, but what you do is you look at the mandatory races, so you know you got those in line. You start with those, and then you start looking at all the other tracks. I mean, we do it almost every day, so it's not that much more work, but it just seems like it when you're there, you want to do well, and it puts a little pressure on you.
And the decision making, I think that's what wears on you, because every move you make could make or break you, and you know you try to worry about every single thing, every detail. It's like a pitcher almost, you know, like every pitch, you know, every pick that you make is a pitch, you know.
Year he won, I mean, I made a couple mistakes and fell behind him, plenty of different horses that we both liked throughout the whole thing, but it's just it felt like now I got to get another one. Now I got to get another one. Now I got to find another 10-1 shot. Now I got to find another 6-1 shot. It's like, and you just scramble and scramble and scramble to try to find these horses. Luckily that year we found them.
And it depends where you are too, because like on a lot of the mandatories, if you already got a lot of points, the mandatories become where you just want to keep accumulating points. So you're you'd be more likely to take a shorter horse that you like. In those other races, you might like a horse who's 3-1 or 5-2. You might love him, but you can't take him in the contest, you know, because you need more. And you certainly can't take him as any one of your other picks. So, but you can take him if you have the points. So it becomes, you know, it's a real dynamic.
What was it, 2 years ago, you guys, the last day you were sitting in with Bick, and it got down to the last race, and I thought it was hilarious. The guy who won hit. He made a winning bet, and you said, "Oh, that was he picked the wrong horse."
He couldn't lose, and he picked the wrong. I mean, it was great that he went out winning, picking the horse, but he did the mistake. He could actually lose because he picked a horse that if somebody else had won, he was going to lose the contest, and he should have blocked that. You know, should have blocked him. It's the only horse that. He had to know the guy that was the second was going to pick that horse, and he didn't do it because he liked the winner, which he was right. That's the weird thing about handicapping. So You know, I was happy that he went out a winner and picked the horse. I mean, it would have been terrible if he had lost that.
Oh, absolutely.
That would have been the worst thing
fun,
ever.
Like I said, it was fun listening to you guys talk about it and the strategy that's involved. I mean, you talk about the choice. I could have gone to Vegas. I don't know. This was 10 or 12 years ago. I was in a Tampa contest, and I came down to a race where I was debating between two horses. And, you know, the story, I picked the wrong one. Right. The other one would have sent me to Vegas. Yeah. And 12 years later, it's still fresh in my
mind. You never forget it. Yeah.
Talk about your approach to handicapping. Don't you guys work together a little bit? One's watching, one's doing some figures. And talk about the handicapping side of the game.
I do a lot of the trip handicapping. I watch a lot of replays. I mean, Paul watches some too, but I do more of that end of it. I'm doing trips at Saratoga, Del Mar, Gulfstream. Paul does all the speed figures, which I don't know how he does it because there's too many tracks. He does 60-some tracks. But we kind of come together with bias information and try to do some other things on here that that other people aren't doing, you know, that kind of thing, breeding information and a lot of stuff with former, you know, with babies of the mare. And I mean, there's so much that I could go through, but I mean,
and we talk a lot of strategy. We go back and forth, and even though we're not at the same place, we might not even talk for a day or two, but you know, afterwards we try to, you know, talk about what you know, racing is an evolving game, and it's I think we're really in a transition period right now, more so than probably people realize. The betting aspect has really changed, primarily because of the computer players, and not only the computer players, but how they've changed. There's obviously been some changes made on the robotics side. You've had to have noticed that a lot of the shorter priced horses are paying less, and also the way the tracks are run. I mean, you guys showed a race. From about 10 years ago, I think, when Blaine won the Whitney up here a couple weeks ago. And I said to everybody, hey, that's when they used to ride on the rail. Because every horse, they look like an old, you know, a real race. And the way that these tracks are being played today, you know, that seems like a bad thing. I don't know. Nobody wants it to be so that the horses are, they don't want to fight to get to the rail. So they keep the rail weak. And it's always, you know, some form of a weak rail. Whether it's not always dead, but it's always weak, and you know,
that's true. Because now we built this, you know, 20 years ago, this database, and we built it in a certain way, and now all these things are changing, and now
that's interesting.
You know, we have to change we do our bias stuff. We have to change the way we do our trainer stuff because the trainers don't run as often. The horses race.
That's another transition.
The horses race off these 6-week layoffs.
That's a big transition.
I mean.
And what's happened with that is it's given the clockers a big edge. And, you know, and that's why you see all these workout reports and stuff, because you have need them. Because, you know, the horse that you like probably hasn't run in 8 weeks or 9 weeks. So, you know, it's a lot easier when, like, Get Stormy. You saw her last week.
Yeah, right.
You know, the clockers didn't have an edge on us. We saw her win in hand and, you know, with a lot reserved. Yeah. We got to watch her gallop out. She probably has walked since then. And that's kind of the way that it used to be. Now, the majority of the horses, you know, have breezed 6 times, 7 times. You have no idea, really. And they've breezed in company. They've actually breezed in a racing manner. It's not like they went out and breezed 4 furlongs in 52 or anything.
Yeah, that's something you don't see on the page, but is important. They're working. You don't realize, and somebody comes up to you afterwards and says, oh, this worked with such and such a stakes horse and finished in front of it. It's like, oh, right. I wish I knew that.
Yeah. Right. And the clockers know that. And then... they're your competition. You know, I think that's partially why you're seeing, you know, shorter prices at Saratoga this year, because, you know, the information's way better, you know, than it used to be. So
that's a good point. Just remember that for a little bit, because I'm sure you guys were around similar to the time I was around. What you get in the racing form, much less is available on the internet. And every once in a while, I'll be going through some old boxes or whatnot and pull up an old racing form from, you know, 30 years ago. Man, it's like rudimentary compared to what you have now.
Yeah, the information is I mean, and not only that, I mean, there's other things out there. You know, these people got their own built databases where they got information.
And speaking of that, you know, when you guys got into the game out in the Buffalo area, and you're talking about making numbers, probably numbers weren't that may have given you a real edge in the days when you
were they weren't published.
Absolutely, when we first started, they weren't even in the racing times. You know, it was. you know, we were selling them on Brisbane, but the, you know, there was very few subscribers, and the people, most people didn't even know how to use them. You know, now when everybody knows how to use a speed figure. So it's an evolving game, and, you know, we still love it, but it is definitely different, and it's difficult. And I would, you know, I tell everybody all the time, you know, don't, just because you're winning today, you know, or you won 3 years ago, it's definitely a new direction. And Duke and I are going to do some more radical things in the next, you know, few months, because we're going to try to, you know, be on top of it. Because I think the, like he was referring to, the big difference is that the biases are completely different. So it's not easy, you know, the way the tracks are. But you know, if you're paying attention, you know, it's not just gold rails and dead rails like it used to be. And when it was a dead rail, it meant that the horses on the outside and closers would win. That's not the case on these kind of tracks. You know, in fact, the closers are at a disadvantage as well. So it's very complicated. It's different, but you know, it's supposed to be hard. It's
racing. That's what makes it so fulfilling.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Wind up with some good favorite track or tracks. I'm sure you guys have the perfect spot out in the backyard. I walk by every couple of days, and you got the hole. Before we get into the favorite tracks, talk a little bit about your situation here. You've been coming for years. You're out in the backyard. You have the spot every day. Have you developed they're like regulars, neighbors that you're
oh yeah. Lots of them.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have lots of neighbors that have kind of almost like joined our group. Like, just guys that have been coming to the track around us for the last 20, 25 years have kind of moved into our purple tablecloth group. So it's kind of, a lot of fun, actually. Yeah. I mean, no, that's these guys all summer long.
That's how we met the Rotundos, you know, from the Horse Players show. And, you know, Peter works for the Breeders' Cup.
Yeah.
We met them because they sat next to us.
They sat next to us for 20 years.
The New York Horsemen's president, Joe Applebaum. Mm-hmm. I met Joe because he sat next to me out in the backyard, you know, and he's one of my, you know, good friends now. So that's a great thing about racing, the social aspect, especially here, Saratoga. You know, you don't get that much anywhere else anymore.
Yeah, I was out in the backyard 5 or so years ago, and somebody, hey, come over, hey, aren't you? And it was Chad's father, who has a regular picnic table a little further down than you guys, but that's the fun of it. So, yeah, give us favorite tracks. Obviously, Saratoga's a favorite for the social atmosphere and whatnot, but as far as playing during the year, Duke, where do you prefer to aim?
Betting-wise, I would say, until this year, Santa Anita. This year, I thought, was a disaster out there with all the, you know, problems they had, but Gulfstream was good this year for me, big fields. I don't love turf racing, but you got to go where the big fields are. I love Saratoga. I mean, even though I'm not doing the greatest, I'm doing okay. But I just love betting these, you know, up here, and the atmosphere, like you said, is just amazing. So,
Paul?
Well, I prefer dirt racing to the turf racing, so I would say the Oaklawn probably right now.
I love Oaklawn.
Is my
and I think there's a lot of value in Oaklawn.
Oh, absolutely, and you know,
no
big
computer
field,
players.
Yeah,
big fields. They at least they don't let the computer players go in for 1,000 bets. I'm sure they're in there somehow, but they're not betting 1,000 per second. So that's a good thing. You know, I always liked the Aqueduct Inner Dirt track. We've got it on the main track now, which is a little bit. He keeps it very deep in the winter. I wish he didn't, and makes the racing a little bit, you know, less fun than it would be if it was. I think they're too careful. But I know it's the environment we are in.
Yeah.
We can't have breakdowns, and it's the weather conditions are tough down there. So I don't want to be critical, but I wish that was a little bit more fast, you know, a little faster. And you were talking to Mark Cassie last week. You know, our favorite tracks always when we were growing up were the Massachusetts Fairs. You know, and, you know, there was talk about Great Barrington running again. That would be great. Just even, probably not betting-wise, but just to be over there would be a great thing.
I was surprised Mark had started over at the New England Fair.
I think I'm the only person that probably goes every year from Saratoga to the Humboldt County Fair.
Yeah, that's where Duke's going next.
I'm going there in about 10 days. So.
In Ferndale.
And I go almost every year.
And just reading about that over the years, I'd like to get up there. That sounds like a lot of fun, too.
It's a really cool town.
Talk a little bit about favorite type of wager.
Well, they've wiped out, you know, they wiped out our pick sixes.
David O'Rourke said he'd like to bring them back. I had him in on Friday. He'd like to have both. And he made the great point, and I think he's exactly right. I think there's two different audiences.
Oh, without a doubt.
100%. Played a two different
Well, groups. You know, that's the, you know, in Hong Kong, they have like a hybrid where, you know, you can play for I think it's $2 Hong Kong, which is the equivalent of about 30 cents. But the base bet is $10 Hong Kong. So in order for it to carry, you know, in order, you can't get the whole pool unless you played it for $10. So it's a carryover where both people can, you know, both amounts can play. So if I want to play for $10 in Hong Kong to try to get the whole carryover, I can. But if I want to play for a smaller amount, you know, I'm allowed to. And I actually think the success of all these rainbows and Empire Pick Sixes are the small amount. The people that want to have the fun, that's why they don't care about the extra takeout, the, you know, essential extra takeout, because they just want to go from race to race, have a chance, you know, for a limited amount of money. And I understand that, and I think they should have that chance. I mean, that's the fun of a pick six, is to hit one, you know, and when you got to put up, you know, 2,000 or... we always said when you play a pick six, there's a gray area that is a bad amount to play, and that's the amount that most people can afford, is somewhere like, I think it was like 128 to 2,000, and we had the exact numbers. But you either wanted to play less than 128 or more than 2,000, you know, and that's kind of where everybody fits.
Yeah.
But in the 20 cents one, you know, everybody can get good coverage in that in those.
Yeah, that's what I say. A $60 ticket and a $2 increment would be a $600 ticket,
right.
So you can get some pretty good coverage.
Right.
So without the pick six, what's your play?
Well, you know, I've always been a try type of guy, but the way we were talking earlier about the computer models and how they've become, you know, more in the vertical bets, you know, you're almost forced into these horizontal pick fives and pick fours, more so the pick fives, just because they're more popular and the pools are so high. But there's a lot of handicapping or gambling stress that goes with pick fives.
Yeah.
You listen to the people on the internet and they say throw out the favorite here and, you know, make these things. It's much more complicated than that, because there's different ways, things that can happen, as you know, and as everybody listens know, you know, you cross one horse out for, you know, one reason or whatever, and you can have losing streaks of the whole meet at Saratoga and made nothing but great plays in the pick five. You know, that's a very hard thing to do mentally, you know, even for me and Duke. You know, we do this every day, and that, you know, I cost myself lots of money earlier in the meet for no real reason. I cut the ticket down. And, of course, the one I crossed out. Because I didn't like, you know, back to those lines. He was one of the favorites who I didn't really like, but I thought could win. So I threw him out for value type. And then the pick five paid, you know, 10,000, and I had it, you know, multiple times. And, you know, you just felt really stupid. And, that's been wearing on me ever since. You know, so these people that tell you that, you know, just keep making good bets and it'll come. It's not quite that simple, you know.
But when that happens to guys like you, it makes guys like me feel good. Because it happens to
my
me.
My pain.
It happens to me, too. So, and I know at the next level it's happening. Duke, your favorite type of wagers?
I mean, it was always a pick six. It was always my favorite wager. It's, you know, not so much anymore. I guess pick fives. I'm trying to wager more on a win and exacta nowadays. I mean, just to keep it simple. But the pick fives is where I can make the most money.
Yeah.
So I guess I got to like that the most, even though I probably take a lot of bad beats in it, just like Paul said. And
Duke's a great bettor. I mean, his skill of how he bets, I've been trying to watch him when he's here. I got to get better. I got to get like him, you know.
That's a great point, too. There are two aspects to the game. People always point to handicapping. Oh, hey, I had a five-winner. But handicapping is one aspect. The actual wagering is a whole other aspect that I don't think gets enough play for
Duke has a real good grasp of what he wants, and he gets what he wants through to the windows. You know, I have a harder time going from what I want to what I want to bet. You know, so, but he's excellent at it. You know, I'll give you an example. He's not even handicapping Monmouth right now. And over the last week or two, I've given him three races at Monmouth what I've liked. And I've just given, he hasn't even looked at the races. I think I've missed all three of them. He's hit all three of them. So that'll tell you, you know how he didn't even handicap the races, and he's won on all three bets, and I've lost on all three.
Yeah, like I say, to me, it's two different things, and it is, you have to be proficient in both of them to cash at the window. Want to get a couple of pushes maybe for this afternoon, but before we do, I also wanted to bring up, got a shot here of a winner's circle photo, and it is Matisse Racing with Ladies Island. A nice little claim for you guys. And I wrote the stats down someplace. I think since the claim in June of last year, 7 wins and 9 starts, including just a week or so ago right up here at Saratoga. Talk a little bit about the racing partnership.
Yeah, that's a filly we claimed with Rich Averill in Florida.
So I'm surprised it isn't our Ladies Island.
Oh, we didn't. He didn't name it. So
yeah, it would have been if he
would have been if he named it. It would have been everything's our. He's a good friend of mine, and we look for horses with speed. Basically, I mean, we look for horses with really high pace figures, and we claimed Panty Price a few years back, who's a really good grass horse, and then when Rich picked this horse out, I guess he'd been tracking this horse at Tampa Bay Downs because that's where he's from.
Yeah.
He told me, he says, you got to go in on this horse. This horse has got similar pace figures to Panty Price. So we just went in. We went, 50-50, and we went in for that horse. And she's just been, razor ever since.
7 for 9.
She got lucky a couple times. She caught some off tracks and some off the turf races. And then we really wanted to win a race up here. So we, when that starter race came up in the book, we said, well, we shipped her up here, and that was just like, what a thrill for everybody to go to the winners.
I pulled that off of Twitter, and the caption said something like, all the neighbors showed up, so yeah, very good. All right, let's get a couple of pushes for this afternoon, and Duke, as I said, out at Santa Anita, you were red hot. Let's see if you can do something similar up here at Saratoga Sunday afternoon.
I don't know if I could top that day, but I wish in the second race, I wish Crew Chief was running by himself. Unfortunately, he's an entry. Maybe we'll get a late scratch of the 1A, but Crew Chief had a really rough trip first time on the grass here a couple weeks back, and I think he's going to run a big race today. Unfortunately, he's going to be over bet being in an entry. Going forward in the third race, I'm just interested in a two-year-old that Constitution's been an extremely hot sire.
So you like the 5.
So I'm interested in the 5.
That was my long shot on Channel 10 last night.
If the 11 draws in, I'm definitely going to use that one. And a couple more. The 5th race, I like the 1 and the 2, High Jingo and Saratoga Treasure. I think High Jingo might just go to the front and never look back. And later on, the horse 7th race, Cross Border. That race has been very productive. And this race is on the inner, and I think he's going to get very good position, probably just in behind the speed, and I think he'll be really tough.
All right, we're overlapping a lot today. I like that. Paul?
I got a streak going on this show, you know.
Last year you guys were great.
I've been on 3 times, I think, with you, and I've given out a winner all 3 times. Now we're going to have more horses this time, so I'll probably lose now. But I like a real weird horse in the first race.
Okay.
One that nobody's going to like. Because he never wins. He's 0 for 18.
Which
I would never tell anybody to play an 0 for 18 horse, but I think there'll be value in the fact that he is 0 for 18 against this field. This is the worst field he's ever run against, I think. And I like the scenario, how it's going to play out.
Fireball shot.
Yeah, fireball shot in the first. And then I thought the second race was 1-2-8 with Duke likes the 1. He's probably got the right horse, but I was going to play doubles into those 3. And then... In the 4th race, I haven't decided which one I like yet, but I like the 3 horses out of the Slimy race. That they were all kind of against that weird track that day, and that race has been productive already. And I think Slimy's already run twice, actually.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I would definitely like the 1, but she's on the rail again, and I don't think she particularly loves that position. If Dylan has been pretty aware of those post ones. He's done a pretty good job, even though his record's not good. He's done a pretty good job in some of those spots before, so I probably will lean on her, but it's 1-8 and 10 are the 3 horses that are out of that race.
Right.
I know in the 6th race, Duke and I were talking. We think that the, we'll just say Hollendorfer horse trained horse there in the 10.
Chatwolf.
The fact that just that she's still here, she's been working good. We like the way the workout pattern. It fits the Hollendorfer model. And Duke and I were saying that this is not the greatest maiden special weight. At least it appears to be.
I like Into Mischief, too, as a sire.
Yeah, and this horse is well-bred, and I think this is they're well-meant here. probably going to be bet. I'm, if we're right, she's going to take money too. So, but I definitely think that's that might be a key in some of those gimmicks, because you might get value in, you know, some of the pick threes or something that are ending there. You know, because she'll be shorter probably than what she is in those pools. You know, and then Duke and I both like a long shot in the that he didn't mention in the seventh race.
Oh yeah, I forgot to mention.
I like that. Irish Valor,
like the 10 a little bit,
the horse that's really improving. And you know, he used to be a grass horse, and when he was younger, his grass races were better. You know, not necessarily grass horse, but his grass races were better. And now he's gotten better on the dirt, and I just think he's really sharp. He came down and chipped once. I expect him, most of those horses that come down to Finger Lakes will fire again. You know, I think they'll. And Mike's a former trainer of mine. He's a great trainer, and I think it's a good spot he's in. And he might get lost in the betting.
Oh, I think so, definitely.
You know. Yeah. And if it was on the dirt, he wouldn't. But because it's on the turf, I think people will be, you know, won't see it as clear. Yeah. I think he's a real good play in the 7.
15-1 on the morning line, kind of like that.
And then the ninth race, I like Bohemian Bourbon in the ninth race as a good. I think she is the best closer, and I think Wesley on the rail, the one, the busy, is the best speed. But I'm going to key the 9, who's worked really well since running, and I think she's another horse who's improved. You know, she's improved more than people might realize right off the form. Those are the horses I kind of like, is the horses that I call them hidden improvement, but you see the improvement, but I think people don't realize how good the horse has gotten, you know?
Yeah. The one in that race ran when the turf was more outside. That was when the first couple days when the out widener turf was playing kind of like. You want to be well off.
If the one can survive the speed in there,
depends
which,
how much it goes.
Which go nobody is a rocket, I don't think. I think she's going to get it, but the question is if, you know, 5.5 furlong turf race, they could send into her, you know, and weaken her up.
All right, interesting. There are some ideas for this afternoon from Paul and Duke Matisse. Again, hopefully you punched your ticket, and hopefully we're back out there covering the NHC this year. Look forward to seeing you guys out there. Bally's this year.
Yeah,
right?
Bally's.
Yeah,
Bally's.
And, looking forward to it. So knock 'em dead in the upcoming contests, and I appreciate the visit and the thoughts this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Paul and Duke Matisse, we'll take a break. When we come back, Nicole Russo, again, we'll talk some sales Monday and Tuesday night and tonight and tomorrow as far as the New York brands. Stay tuned.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
You like free money? Well, Capital OTB gives its players plenty of opportunities to cash in. At Capital OTB, there are so many ways for horse players to receive bonus dollars by simply participating in promotions such as our bankrolls, bounty bets, online handicapping contest, and much, much more. Plus, with Capital OTB's player rewards program, you get actual cash back. So what are you waiting for? Log on today at CapitalOTB.com or CapitalOTBBet.com and claim your free money.
do with those fractions. But
welcome back to Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning. Thanks again to the Matisse brothers, Paul and Duke, for swinging by. It's always fun to have them in, talk a little handicapping and more. Also, fun to have a conversation with our friend Nicole Russo from the Daily Racing Forum, talking a little breeding, sales on Monday and Tuesday, preview of tonight and tomorrow. Nicole, good morning.
Good morning.
Haven't seen you in a while locally. Why? Because, again, now you're with the Daily Racing Forum, but for years with the Saratogian.
Yep, based out of Lexington now with the Racing Forum, kind of the epicenter of the bloodstock and sales industry. But I come back up here for the summer sales, which, you know, Phasing Tipton just celebrated the 99th anniversary of the Saratoga selected yearling sale and had terrific results last week.
Yeah, we'll talk sales in just a moment. But as you sat down, you said, I'll go back and get your thoughts on yesterday. The two-year-old was very nice, Green Light Go from Jimmy Jerkins. But continuing what I think has now been a theme, I said it after McKinsey and the Whitney, I said to a few people, the racing here has been great. As horses have come and really validated big performances up here, and God Stormy did it yesterday in the four-star day, validating what we saw last week, where it would have been a track record, except it had been broken about 24 hours ahead of time. And then she came back and did it yesterday, the filly against the boys. That was a phenomenal performance.
Yeah, and I mean, certainly, as you mentioned, the turf course here has been fast this meet. But, you know, she almost broke the course record last week, winning the De La Rose, a course record that had just been set a day or two prior. And then yesterday, I mean, I'm certainly giving an assist to Jidu, who went out and ran, you know, phenomenal early fractions there in the four-star Dave, but got Stormy. It's not like she came home slow or no 108 by her performance and smashed that course record. The course has been fast, but I think that one might stick around for a while.
Yeah, that was really impressive and a lot of fun yesterday. All right, let's go back and talk a little sales. Always fun and tell people to stop by the sales up here every year. You'll have another chance tonight and tomorrow for the New York Bred Sales, which have become more popular just socially in recent years. But certainly Monday night, it was wall-to-wall people. Tuesday night, there was a little threat of a storm, but there was still a big crowd there. And Tuesday night, plenty of fireworks. Give me your impressions overall of the Monday and Tuesday night select sale.
Yeah, definitely. I think it was a really strong sale. You mentioned Tuesday night, a lot of fireworks. Curlin, such a consistent classic sire, had 3 7-figure yearlings that night, led by a pair of 1.5 million colts. Curlin averaged 835,000 from his 10 yearlings sold. He just had a phenomenal sale. Of course, Tappet, who's a perennial leading sire, also had a terrific sale. He had Monday night's only 7-figure lot and finished up with a $620,000 average. Those are the two big sires, along with, of course, Warfront, that we're going to be watching as we move into the other sales, such as Keeneland September next month. But I mean, I think just a really strong market at Phasing Tipton. You know, the gross sales were down due to, I think, fewer horses in the catalog to begin with, a slightly higher buyback rate. It's a very selective market right now. But quality sells. Not only were the average and median up by, you know, double-digit gains in percentage, the average was a sale record and broke the previous record, which was established in 2001, which, you know, was before a lot of international turmoil, was before the recession of 2008. So I think that is, you know, a really strong indicator of the health of the market right now.
Yeah, certainly the 3 7-figure horses on Tuesday night, very impressive. Our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds picked up one of those. I think we have a little video of the HIP 153 and HIP 174. They tied for the sales topper. They both had 1.5 million and standing out in the backyard. It's always fun as they go from 900,000 to a million. There's a and then every 100,000 after that. And in the ring themselves, they got to keep it quiet for the horses until the horse goes out of the ring. But as they say, our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds picked up one of these sales toppers and forming partnerships, but a couple of really nice horses getting that 1.5 million again, tying for the sales topper.
Yeah, and you know, forming these partnerships in the sales ring, you know, Terry Finley from West Point told us that their partnership was kind of coming together in the moments before the horse went to the ring there. You know, both of these $1.5 million lots purchased in partnership, and that's really become a trend at the top of the market in recent years, which, you know, makes things a little more difficult for the sales companies to get the numbers up because they wish some of these people were in there bidding against each other. But from the point of view in the buyer, especially with the market recovering from the recession over the last several years, from their point of view, going in on partnership, especially with some, you know, maybe big farms on some of these colts who might go on to be stallion prospects, it's a way of spreading out the risk a little bit because it's a long road to go with these horses.
You mentioned Curlin, you mentioned Tappet, you mentioned Warfront. You've been watching the sales scene so far this year. It's always fun to see the sires that are new with yearlings entering the sales ring. Who pops out as far as kind of freshman sires?
Well, really, among this year's first crop yearling sires, Frosted is, you know, I think kind of the breakout horse we're starting to see right now. Tappet's Sons, he's relatively early in his career as a sire of sires. When you look at things in, you know, relative terms, putting them in context, you know, his sons don't have that many foals out there, relatively speaking. He's really broken out in recent years, of course, with Tapizar's champion filly Monomoy Girl last year. This year, he has several good sons in this competitive freshman class, including Constitution, who is red hot right now, graded winners on both coasts. And, you know, now into the fray comes Frosted with his first yearlings. He had the top price for a first crop yearling sire at the Phasing July sale in Kentucky last month, which kind of began the season. And then now here at this sale. And again, this market does trend toward proven sires right now, unless you're a truly exceptional horse like we saw with American Pharoah last year. While Frosted put up some exceptional numbers, you know, against proven sires, he had an $850,000 filly at the selected sale. He had two others sell for prices in excess of $500,000, and he finished with a $371,000 average, which is really very solid for a first-year stallion. And I think he's got a strong contingent at the New York bred sale as well.
Some of them that have been on the scene for a little bit of time talk about their prominence and how they've been doing so far this year. And the one that really steps out to me, and I talk about it on the handicapping show a lot, I love Into Mischief with young horses. They're all precocious.
Yeah, absolutely. Not only is he currently the leading juvenile sire, a position he held on the North American Juvenile Sire list last year, he's currently actually the leading general sire by earnings right now as well. He's really, you know, with Kefefe, with Mia Mischief, with Owendale, with, you know, all these consistent runners, he's really put himself into the national spotlight. And, you know, as a result, his young horses have become very much in demand. He recorded his first seven-figure yearling last fall at Keeneland, September. He was very popular, as you'd expect, in the juvenile market this year. And I expect us to continue to see that. He's really on the rise right now.
Yeah, as they say, handicapping, they always jump out off the page at me. And Jeremiah has a firster in today by Into Mischief that I'm hoping might be a little bit of a price and get it done. All right, so we've talked a little bit about overall and the Monday, Tuesday. Now give us a little preview. Folks are going to head over tonight or tomorrow afternoon. Got to make that, you know, with no racing on Monday, things have switched up. Instead of the Saturday, Sunday nights, it's now Sunday night and Monday afternoon. But what are some things people might want to pay attention to at the New York bred sale?
Well, I mean, as you mentioned, the New York bred sale has gotten more and more popular in recent years, and I mean, that's with the success of the New York bred program, certainly. Looking at it in recent years, I mean, grade one winners like Mind Your Biscuits, Four Star Crook, F&X, Diversify, you know, a New York bred isn't just, you know, for New York anymore. They can run anywhere, and as a result, this program has gotten so strong. You know, it's in its recent years, it's continued to set and then break its own records. Last year, across the board, records at the sale for gross, average, and median, led by a $600,000 Pioneer of the Nile colt. I'm expecting that we'll see some similar numbers this year. You know, certainly Kentucky stallions, you know, mares that are bred to stallions in Kentucky and then come back to New York to foal, certainly those are well represented, including Frosted, who I mentioned, who I think is a really strong contingent at this sale. But, you know, you also have your New York stalwarts mentioned, Freud, who's the perennial leading sire in the state, Central Banker and Mission Impassable, who have become leading juvenile sires in the state in recent years. They're all represented. And I think a good group of first-year stallions for New York, I think the quality of stallions stallions in the state continues to get stronger and stronger with the success of the program. This year, sadly, you know, you have the first and only crop for FNX, who was a grade one winner who died after his only season at stud. I think that was a big loss for the state because it was huge for him to come back to his home state to stand. Prior to outs, you had 8 yearlings from his first, you know, from his only crop in this sale. But first year yearling sires in New York also include, you know, Leban, who's one of the first sons of Uncle Mo at stud, and War Dancer, who's a multiple graded winning son of Warfront. So those represent some big sire lines moving into the state, and I'm interested to see how they're received with their first yearlings here.
I assume, and nice coverage coming up in the Daily Racing Form in the New York Bred Sale.
Of course, we'll be there hammer to hammer.
That's what we like to see. Again, you can follow Nicole in the Racing Form. She had a nice follow-up on the two nights last week, Monday and Tuesday, all year long at the sales. And what after Saratoga, what's the next big stop?
After Saratoga, the next big stop is Keeneland September, which is really a bit of a bellwether for the market. You know, Phasing Saratoga here, we've talked about, it's a boutique sale. It's a high-end sale. Keeneland September starts with that type of horse in book one, but then moves on to really test all levels of the market and levels of the international market through a two-week run. So I think the strength, you know, at the top of the market, the demand for quality is really good. That's what we saw at Phasing Saratoga. Keeneland September will tell us a little bit more about the middle and regional markets.
And again, you can follow all of that coverage in the Daily Racing Form from Nicole Russo. Nicole, as always, great to see you. Thanks for the visit, and enjoy the next couple of nights. I'll see you over there.
Thanks. See you there. Thanks.
And again, don't forget, it's just a couple of blocks up the street. If you haven't been to the sales yet, it's always a lot of fun. You can go out in the backyard. There's an open-air bar back there and a big crowd, and watch the horses go through and pick up a catalog and maybe make some of your own picks and see how well they sell. It's always a lot of fun. Tonight and tomorrow afternoon, right up the street, Basic Tipton Pavilion on East Avenue. All right, we'll take our last break, come back, and wrap it up for this Sunday morning. Stay tuned.
It's been home to some of the sport's biggest moments, monumental achievements, and extraordinary records. At Santa Anita, we'll set another before the first gate even opens, as the Breeders' Cup returns for a record 10th time. This November, the stars will shine, champions will be crowned, and when the unbelievable happens, you'll want to be there to see it. The Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Visit Rivers Casino and Resort, the Capital Region's only destination for live table game action and the hottest new slots paying out millions. And they're off. Horse betting is now at Rivers Casino and Resort with Capital off-track betting terminals and live tellers located just off the gaming floor at Van Slick's. Get in on all the action at Rivers Casino and Resort.
No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Again, the sale's just up the street at the Phasing Tipton Pavilion. Tonight kicks off at 7 o'clock. Tomorrow it's noontime. So keep that in mind if you want to see the sales. And as I say, socially there's a huge crowd Monday and Tuesday. But the New York Bred Sale is becoming much more popular. Nice crowd over there as well. Just another part of the Saratoga scene. Highly recommended if you haven't been yet. Tonight and tomorrow afternoon. All right, don't forget Low Rollers today over on the front side. Hop in, take your shot. I will be playing. I got to get back on the beam there. I have been kind of whiffing. I had a couple of contests where early on I thought, I'm in this, and then just couldn't sustain. But I'm hoping we're in the turnaround mode. So jump over there. Don't forget, for us at Capital OTB, today down at the Clubhouse Racebook, a double promotion. So stop on by 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany if you can't make it here to the track. If you do have an open afternoon, it looks like a really nice day again here up at Saratoga, as yesterday was a nice day. There was a little, after the eighth race, I want to say yesterday, clouds came in and people were kind of thinking and looking at their phones, oh, it may rain, and it never did. It wound up, the clouds cleared out and turned out to be a beautiful afternoon through and through, and I think it's more of the same on this Sunday. So again, if you don't have plans, come on up to the track and enjoy some racing on a good card that hopefully we gave you some interesting ideas for. Both Duke and Paul Matisse tossed out some ideas on this Sunday afternoon, so hopefully they knock it out of the park, and we enjoyed their conversation and Nicole Russo as well. Our friend Steve Bick, again, hopefully he's back in here with us next Sunday. We wish him the best, speedy recovery as he's well through the healing process. And again, game plan is to have him sitting here next Sunday, looking forward to that, and him being back on the radio as well. All right, I'm going to wrap things up for this edition of Loose on the Lead. We'll be back Wednesday morning with our morning programming here on the network. 9 o'clock handicapper support, 10 o'clock racing across America. Enjoy the racing this afternoon. We'll see you back here on Wednesday morning.
From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by Thoroughgraph. Everything you need to win. Visit Thoroughgraph.com. The new Colonial Downs and the Virginia Equine Alliance. Hill and Dale, home of perennial standouts. Curlin, Kitten's Joy, Midnight Loot, and emerging stallions, Violence, Byron, and Army Mule. Visit HillandDaleFarms.com for consignments at the 2019 yearling sales. Case Supply, the kitchen and bath professionals across upstate New York. Showrooms in Syracuse, Auburn, and Amsterdam. Make your dream kitchen and bath a reality. Visit CaseSupplyInc.com. And McMahon of Saratoga, standing breakout stallion, central banker. Number one in New York and among the nation's leading young sires. Visit McMahonThoroughbred.com.